Eastern Missouri, Southern Illinois, and Western Kentucky. The forecast for East Central Illinois this afternoon, sunny, hot, and humid with a near record high in the mid to upper 90s. The heat index will be around 100. The wind from the southwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts to 25. Tonight, partly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms after midnight, the low 72. The wind out of the southwest from 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, partly sunny with the scattered showers and thunderstorms. Storms not quite as hot tomorrow, the high 87. The wind will be from the northwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms, a low of 65 and an east wind from 5 to 10 miles per hour. Friday, cooler. Showers and thunderstorms are likely, the high 85. Friday night, mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms and a low in the upper 60s. Saturday, partly sunny with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms. Expect a high in the upper 70s. Saturday night through Sunday night, partly cloudy with lows in the low 60s and a high Sunday in the upper 70s. Temperatures across Illinois and Indiana at noon Central Time, largely 90 and higher. At Rockford, it was 84. In O'Hare, at Chicago's O'Hare Airport, 91 degrees. Bloomington, Mattoon, and Carbondale all reported 90 degrees. It was 92 degrees at South Bend, Lafayette, and Terre Haute. Indianapolis reported 89 degrees. Willard Airport reported 94 degrees at the top of the hour. The dew point 65. The relative humidity 38%. The wind out of the southwest at 16 with gusts to 23 miles per hour. The barometric pressure 29.93 and steady. And at 12:39 Central Time, 93 degrees in Urbana. The sky is sunny. NBC has retained its hold on the Olympics through 2020. The network, now owned by Comcast, just sealed a $4.4 billion deal with the International Olympic Committee. As NPR's Howard Berkus reports, NBC is promising more live coverage.
But not necessarily on television. If you want the marathon swim live or cross-country skiing live or everything live, NBC's Mark Lazarus points to
every platform known today or to become known between now and the time that deal comes up. It is for television, it is for tablet, it is for mobile, it is for broadband.
Olympic primetime will be programmed
to garner the most viewers, the biggest groups, the shared experience of families.
Which should bring in more money from commercials. NBC needs more given its $200 million deficit from last year's Vancouver Olympics. The new deal starts in 2014 and extends through three more games. None are set for the United States so far, so there's no home country Olympics to make the unprecedented $4 billion deal a better bet. Still, says Comcast CEO Brian Roberts,
we are confident that we will build value for our shareholders and have a profitable relationship.
But ABC, ESPN dropped out of the bidding, citing good business sense. The International Olympic Committee is happy because American broadcast rights are the single biggest source of Olympic revenue, and they're now locked in for a decade. Howard Berkus, NPR News.
Housed in the Art Institute of Chicago, the Thorne Rooms have enchanted generations. They are a collection of 68 miniature rooms, each one designed in the style of a different place and time. Marianne Malone loved visiting the collection as a child, and as an adult, they inspired her to write a novel for young people, The 68 Rooms. Malone is taking part today in the Illini Union Bookstore's second annual Off the Page Summer Book Festival. When her book was published in 2010, she spoke with Illinois Public Media's Jim Meadows. Let's listen back to his report on the book and its inspiration.
The Thorne Miniature Rooms are the catalyst for everything that happens in the 68 Rooms, a book named for the number of Thorne Rooms in the Art Institute's collection. In this excerpt, read by author Marianne Malone, the Thorne Rooms make a deep impression on the book's 11-year-old heroine, Ruthie.
Looking through the glass fronts of these rooms, which were each about the size of two or three shoeboxes, Ruthie couldn't get over how realistic they were, like enchanted little worlds. Some had high ceilings and elaborate woodwork and finely carved furniture. Some looked like medieval castles. Others looked cozy and inviting. There were miniature paintings, carpets, toys, books, and musical instruments. Many of the rooms had doors through which you could peer into small side rooms and hallways. She could even see out the windows to street scenes and gardens complete with trees and flowers, or to painted landscapes beyond.
Malone says she shares Ruthie's fascination with the Thorn Rooms and used to visit them frequently while growing up in the Chicago suburbs. The rooms are named for Mrs. James Ward Thorne, a wealthy Chicago society matron who was also something of a self-taught historian. Lindsay McCann Morgan, who oversees the Thorne Rooms at the Art Institute, says Mrs. Thorne had both the means and the passion to create the rooms, doing meticulous research and hiring skilled craftspeople to build them on a scale of 1 inch to 1 foot.
All these things are made by a person by hand, handcrafted. There's a clock that works, and to imagine the scale of the gear work in that clock that's actually functioning. The count of the rugs is 40 count. It's pretty impressive, the detail that these rooms go into.
Marianne Malone says the idea for the book came at a time when she had been thinking about her childhood visits to the Thorne Rooms. She talked to her two grown daughters and found they had the same warm memories.
And I had been teaching at the time, and often within the process of teaching, you make miniature things. And some of my students had actually decorated their cubbies as little interiors, little mini Thorn Rooms that they would invent themselves. So it was bubbling in my head, I guess, thinking about them. And one day after I had been teaching all day, I came home and took a little nap and woke up and had the idea for the book right there. The whole arc of the story came full bloom into my head with these two characters. And I went right down to my computer. It was, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and wrote sort of a 4-page sketch of this idea. And I said to my husband at dinner, I think I have a really good idea.
In the 68 rooms, Ruthie and her friend Jack come across a magic key that allows them to shrink down to just the right size to enter the Thorn Rooms. Staying after hours at the Art Institute one night, they use the magic key, enter the miniature rooms, and discover that the rooms serve as gateways to the actual places and times they depict. Malone reads another excerpt from her book in which Ruthie and Jack meet Sophie, a 14-year-old French girl living in the days of King Louis XVI.
"Next year I'm to be married," she said. Jack and Ruthie looked at each other. Ruthie tried to picture her sister, Claire, who was just a couple of years older than Sophie, being married. She couldn't. "Married? Who will you marry?" Ruthie asked. "I do not know yet," she said. "Of course, it will be someone at court. That is all I know. My father will arrange it." She stated all this as a somewhat sad matter of fact. "But I want to hear more about your country. Tell me all about your revolution."
You picked two dangerous times, that one in 18th century France, and then in New England, just about the time of the Salem witch trials.
Right.
But the kids don't actually get into the thick of it.
They affect these lives a little bit, but I didn't want them to be participants too much in history. That would have been a different book, I think, altogether. And also, I studied art history in college, and I love art history, and I'm married to an art historian, and there's something about knowing the stories that objects have that can tell you, that can open up about history, is a little bit of the subtext of the book. I look at those Thorn Rooms, and I think many people do, and not only are they wonderful and magical escapism, but they also tell you a lot about how people lived when you look at the interiors and the objects that they were among. So I think I wanted the kids to have a sense of that and have it be really well illustrated with meeting these people. But I didn't want them to participate in history too much.
Ruthie and Jack have as much adventures in and around the Thorn Rooms as they do inside them. At one point, while in their miniature state, the children have to battle an unfriendly cockroach. And on a more practical level, their unauthorized overnight stay at the Art Institute includes the challenge of making it to the restrooms without getting caught by the museum guards. You know, one thing that struck me about the book and what you had the two kids doing is they both approached the Thorn Rooms in different ways. That you had Ruthie fascinated by the worlds of the rooms, while Jack seemed to be interested in how the whole thing worked, how the whole rooms were set up, what was going on behind the scenes.
Right. I wanted them to be opposites. He's a sort of adventurous character. Ruthie's a little bit more of an observer. She's a little more cautious in life. But she loved the rooms, first of all. She's sort of a girl who was, I set her up with somebody who had to share a bedroom in her kind of smallish apartment. And she's always craving more and beautiful space, very much like I did as a child. I shared a room for many, many years with my sister. And that's a drive for her, this idea of place and beautiful places and places that are exciting and can take you away from what you think of as your rather regular life. Jack doesn't have that feeling because his life doesn't seem regular anyway. So they approach it from very different points.
The 68 rooms is on sale at the Art Institute, where Thorn Rooms curator Lindsay McCann Morgan says she's overheard it mentioned by some of the children who visit. But while Ruthie and Jack may once again outwit the museum guards for an overnight visit to the Thorn Rooms, Morgan warns against anyone else who might have the same idea.
I won't go into details, but there are a few things that wouldn't quite fly in reality. But I definitely wouldn't recommend doing that at any age. It's a little bit dangerous and also a little bit naughty.
The 68 Rooms by Marianne Malone is published by Random House. I'm Jim Meadows, Illinois Public Media.
Marianne Malone was working on a sequel to The 68 Rooms when we first aired this story in 2010. Stealing Magic, A 68 Rooms Adventure, is now scheduled for publication by Random House in January of 2012.
For a snapshot of life in East Central Illinois, take an audio trip along Route 150. We'll supply the vehicle.
Just keep your faith and keep going is all you can do.
The people along 150 face the same issues, concerns, and joys of life we all face.
This is home. This is home. This is home. Yeah.
Listen all this month for stories from our trip, from rail trails and dirt tracks to churches, stores, and farms. Life on Route 150 on Morning Edition from Illinois Public Media.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 8th of June, 2011. It's the birthday of the editor who is given credit for ushering in the golden age of science fiction, John W. Campbell, born Newark, 1910. His father was an electrical engineer. The boy was interested in science growing up, started writing science fiction when he was 18, when he was a student at MIT. Wrote a novella early on called Who Goes There?, about a group of researchers in Antarctica discover an alien buried in the ice that has the ability to inhabit the body of anyone it attacks to such a degree that it's impossible for the researchers to recognize which of them are still themselves